everybody, and welcome to Northview's High School Youth Between Two Worlds podcast. My name is Andrew. I also go by the name Gitch. I don't totally know why, but that's
I mean, we can explain it why you go by the name Gitch.
No, let's not bother. I don't think anyone wants to hear about that. No, really, there's no story.
There's a big origin story behind your name,
no,
Gitch.
No, there's not.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm here.
If you can make one up right now.
No, don't make one up. We only speak truth. I'm here with Ron Friesen and Luke Friesen.
Hey, I'm Luke.
I'm Ron.
We are delighted to present to you, listeners, today, episode 13 of Between Two Worlds podcast.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts.
That's a lot. 13. I mean, one a week, 13 weeks. We're talking like 3 months we've been rolling.
Wow.
I mean, that's just actual podcasting. Plus, there's the dream phase. 2-3 years.
Oh,
man.
The dream phase, yeah.
So, you guys happy to be here? I'm happy to be here.
I'm always happy to see your face, Gitch.
I have a good face for radio. I think I've said that before.
That's what my mom always said.
Yeah.
Your mom said that.
I have a good face for radio. So if you're listening and you're hearing me and you're glad you're not seeing me, hey, you're welcome. It's a gift.
That's what podcasting's for.
But let's be honest. I think we might all fall into that category of faces for radio. I'm looking around. I'm thinking so.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do radio.
Exactly. Tell me a time that you were humiliated, whether it was by something you did or something someone else did, you know, at your expense. The German word that I learned a while back is Schadenfreude, which means pleasure, taking pleasure or taking enjoyment at someone else's shame. So what's a time where you have been, or someone else has been, Schadenfreude? Or how would that work? Maybe you would be the Schadenfreude.
How people would take pleasure out of me being in pain.
Yeah, that's my point. I think I lost it with the German.
You did. The German stuff really did not.
Okay, but that's
a
real German word.
I don't know how you pronounced it.
I don't know if it's a verb or a
Schadenfreude.
Noun. Schadenfreude. But if you say it, people definitely, oh man, this guy knows German. So just say it. Schadenfreude.
Who says that?
Every time I hear someone speak German, I'm like, wow.
Well, they are speaking German.
Luke spoke German yesterday. One word.
Fröhlich.
Fröhlich, too.
No, it was Traurigkeit.
Nah, that's not right.
I have it on my phone.
Yeah, that was a typo. I didn't even mean to say it.
And I thought, wow, that's impressive. This guy knows German. So you made that up.
It was a German keyboard. I have a German keyboard and it switched onto it.
Oh,
and it
so I'm the sucker. I fell for it. Anyways, let's talk about Schadenfreude, shall we?
Schadenfreude. All right, I can go first.
You can go first. I'll let you have this one.
This is be short and sweet. I was a youth pastor in Saskatchewan, and I was working in the local high school, and they had kind of a drama night of multiple short skits, short drama things, about four or five, and I introduced them all. And so I was the MC for the night. And after introducing one of them, I had to take my mic and put it underneath the set where there was a bed there. And I had to slide the microphone underneath that bed because that's where somebody was hiding to, you know, for the play. Okay, so the gym is packed. And I bent down and ripped my pants from the very top to the very bottom as I bent over.
That's awesome.
And I go, oh!
Like, was your butt towards the crowd?
Totally towards the crowd. Totally towards the crowd.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I go, oh my goodness. And so I knew I had enough time to, you know how you run when your pants are split?
No, I've never done that.
You've never done that? You have to run with your legs together. And just,
you should just
squeeze your cheeks together and just... And then you just get to run. And so that's how I kind of removed myself from the stage. And then I ran to my car and drove home and changed pants.
Before you had to be on stage.
The stage next
you
time.
You had an extra pair of pants in your car?
No, I had to go home.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't far away. So I knew that I had about 15 minutes or whatever. So I could go home and change and come back.
Wow. Did anyone ever say anything?
No, they didn't know.
No one noticed?
Oh, they noticed. Oh. But I mean, they did not notice. I mean, they noticed that I had new pants. And then some that were right close. I mean, you had to be real close to realize what had happened there. So,
but. Wow, that is embarrassing. That is Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude.
Wow.
You said it wrong.
How do you say it?
Schadenfreude. If there's any German speakers out there and you want to email us the correct pronunciation of Schadenfreude, please do so.
Isn't Gulovitz German?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
I can go now.
Please.
My story was when I was in Cape Henry and we were doing the cha-cha slide. And so I was severely pumped up, like really pumped up about this. I don't know. It was one of the last days there, and I was just pumped up. It was before winter break, before we were going on our travel day or whatever. Me and my buddy, we were going to go hit up a couple of countries and just travel around the world. And so we were doing the cha-cha slide, and I give out this yell like this, woo! But I had some phlegm in my throat. And so it came up, I went, woo! And it went, whoosh! And it went up, and I'm in the middle of the gym, and it went no joke. It passed one line of people, and then went and hit a girl right in the back of the head. So just all my whole loogie just went up, hit her, and I'm like this, and I'm still dancing along, being like, okay, should I say anything? You know what? I'm gonna leave this one. I'm not gonna say anything.
Oh, good plan.
Oh no.
And then I see the girl beside her is the girl I had a crush on, and she looks there, looks at me. Looks at the hair, looks at me, points at the hair, points
no,
at me.
No.
And I'm just like, and she's like, that is the most disgusting thing I have ever seen.
Oh.
And I'm like, by that time, everyone starts looking like, what happened? And now everyone stopped dancing. Everyone's looking at me. And then the girl that got the loogie in the hair just eventually stops dancing. She's like, what's everyone staring at? And then the girl beside her, Luke loogied in your hair. And she's like, what? And there's just this big chunk of yellow spit in her hair, and then the girl takes her to the bathroom. I'm just standing there, and everyone's just looking at me. I'm like, I don't know.
So did she get a buzz cut then after that?
No, they went to the bathroom and just brushed it off.
I feel like she would have needed to burn her hair
off.
Well,
it's not sticky. It's just spit.
Well, there's a loogie in there.
This girl that you sort of liked,
yeah,
that kind of endear her more to you? Or
I think so, yeah.
You
I
to her?
I wooed her.
Where are you now with her? What's the status here?
I think 5,000 miles away.
Oh.
There you go.
So the status
good
of,
one, Gitch.
Of relationship.
Where are you? Where are you with that? What is that supposed to mean?
I just mean, how did that fare for you? You know, where are you guys at now?
Well, we're 5,000 miles away. So.
Wow. So things are looking good.
Things are looking, I mean, the best they've ever looked.
Oh.
So,
not bad. I remember I was, when I was in high school, so I think I was probably grade 10, summer of grade 10 maybe, going into grade 11. And I've told you guys before about my fear of birds. I don't know. There's probably some kind of phobia for that.
I've never heard.
Okay. You guys need to know.
All birds?
Most birds, yeah.
What Unless, birds aren't you afraid of?
I'm not afraid of birds that are soaring a long ways away because I can appreciate the beauty of a bird flying.
But if you see like geese on the ground.
Geese on the ground, ducks, not so much. But if they get close, I'll tell you why I'm afraid of birds. Because birds are unpredictable, kind of like felines or cats. Much the same. They're unpredictable. So I have this fear, and I start to curl up when they get near me, or if they're flapping. I think it's the flapping that I don't like. They got the claws. I'm terrified of birds.
Wait, birds have claws?
Talons.
Oh, talons.
Yeah.
Okay.
The large ones.
The
large talons.
I was thinking of ducks. No. Geese. No. Huh. So basically you're scared of falcons and like pigeons.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I mean,
crows?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, what's your story?
My story goes like this, but I tell you about my fear of birds because it's necessary to properly understand this story. So we were up, I was a part of this summer camp program, and we were up on a hike one afternoon, and we got to this place. It's called Battleship Lake. If you've ever hiked through Strathcona, it's beautiful. We're at Battleship Lake, and one of the great things about Strathcona is there are countless whiskey jacks. They're these little birds. They're innocent, and I'm not afraid of a little whiskey jack because they're nice looking birds, but I do get afraid. I get a little nervous and tense when whiskey jacks start getting close to me. Like most birds, I can appreciate them at a distance, but when they start getting close, I start getting a little uncomfortable. Well, I don't hang out with the greatest group of people who are very understanding and compassionate, shall we say.
I really like where the story is going so far.
So word gets out that Andrew has a kind of a fear for birds, while they also know that whiskey jacks are like maybe the most domestic, at least these whiskey jacks, domesticated, friendly birds that if you hold out food, they'll land right on your fingers and eat right out of your hand. That to me is just repulsive. That's a horrifying thought of a bird eating out of my hand. So what do they start doing? They start throwing their trail mix, their cheesies, their snacks, their breadcrumbs at me.
Mm.
I kid you not, at me. Just because they take pleasure. These people are sick. They take pleasure and enjoyment in my shame.
Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude at its finest. So people are throwing food at me and I'm literally like a walking, what's the word?
Meat stick.
Meat. I was going for a smorgasbord. That's what I was going for.
I like walking meat stick.
Meat stick is good, though, too.
I'm literally a walking, flailing mess meat stick that people are just laughing at. I was so embarrassed. And then I just eventually ran away, and I was mad.
Okay, why were you embarrassed?
Because people are laughing at me, looking like a total idiot.
Have you got counseling?
I haven't yet. I've actually...
I'm thinking about, like, when you take Mason on a hike up into the Whistler country, and he wants to have these little Whiskey Jacks land on his dad and say, Dad, you're the coolest guy in the whole world. What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Oh, you got to work on some stuff here.
I know.
Mason is counting on you to overcome this fear of Whiskey Jacks. That would sit on top of your head and peck your peck your food off your top of your head.
That to me is like one of the scariest things.
Really?
I could, oh,
dude, you are so weird.
I know. But just birds, they're
you
just...
You live on the West Coast where there are multiple birds everywhere.
I know. But if they're minding their own, I'll mind my own. But if they start getting up in my face, oh, man.
Can you recount how many times have birds gone in up in your face?
Lots.
Really?
Well, even if they just fly by, or hummingbirds.
How close is up in your face?
Like anywhere within 15 feet.
15? That's so far away.
Like this small room we're in, if there's a bird in this proximity, I'm a mess. I can't explain it.
I have to work on this myself, personally. We have to see how this actually plays out. We'll get the cameras going.
Join us for our next podcast.
It's going to be live. We're actually going on.
And we're
going
to have Gitch in the room with a couple of birds.
We're going to release them and lock the doors.
Some birds.
That would be schadenfreude.
I think
we can take... is a great segue here. I think we can take pleasure or enjoyment on others' pain. But speaking of pain, life isn't always easy. And it's not always, you know, lollipops and rainbows. And, you know, the media portrays things, movies, all these kinds of things tend to portray life almost a little bit surreal. And that's maybe what makes movies and these kinds of things, TV shows, so enjoyable. But I mean, the reality is life is tough, and tragedies happen, and hearts are broken, and, you know, lives are lost. And so one of the things I want to talk about today is how do we respond, or maybe how do students respond, and how do we as youth workers or even parents, how do we respond when things like this happen? And so let's take a death, for example, whether that's in a family or whether that's like within a church setting. How do we equip, and what do we say? How do we help navigate through that road when teenagers or when our kids in our ministries or our families are going through a loss?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, grief and loss is a part of life. I mean, probably all of us around this table have experienced the loss of a good friend, a family member, all of those things. And, you know, I mean, obviously I'm the old guy on the corner here, but it doesn't take long in our lives to figure out that this is going to happen to teenagers sooner or later, whether it's a loss of a grandparent, you know, which is expected but unexpected, you know what I mean? If they've reached that age and things like that. But with, you know, various ways of dealing with this, whether it's accidental, whether it's suicidal, I mean, you know, we all live in the world of working with young people where we deal with, you know, all kinds of death. And some of it is accidental. Some of it could be suicidal, planned death. Some of it is, you know, it's illness that relates to death. I mean, there's kids in our youth group who have lost parents. There's, you know, kids who have lost siblings. There's kids who have, you know, students who have lost friends. But we all come to that place. And so grief and loss are very, very real and a very big part of life. But we don't like to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't definitely want it to happen. If it is a long ways away and it doesn't hit us personally, we can deal with it better. But if it hits us personally, boy, that's when it's crazy. As a youth pastor, I've, over the years, and I mean, my very first year as a youth pastor in 1980, a 12-year-old boy was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember visiting with him in the hospital, and this kid was lights out, one of the best kids I'd ever seen in my life in terms of potential. And family loved him, and oh man, it's just awful. But just to see him go downhill so quickly, and And that was my first funeral that I ever participated in, was a 12-year-old boy, you know. You know, a couple of years later, I did a, you know, I did a two-year-old. You know, my one of my youth leaders' sons passed away. We were actually, Dwayne and I were actually hunting together that day, and we got home, and his son had passed away. Just, they couldn't get a hold of us because we were out in the boondocks. It's terrible. And, you know, and then I've been around where I've lost youth leaders. I remember getting, knocking on the door, a good buddy, one of my youth leaders, and banging on the door Sunday night and said, Andy's gone, Andy's gone. And I go, what? You know, and here, he died in a diving accident off of Cliff Park here, and off of Vancouver there. And, you know, and I rushed to the scene, went to the RCMP office, you know, and just met with the family. And, you know, there's so many things you have, you know, I wouldn't say it's instinctive, but as caregivers, which we all are around this table, we are going to be put into a place that is so not comfortable. Like, and will I say the right thing? Will I do the right thing? And all of those things. So, but that's part of what we do. You know, we are going to be placed into situations where, okay, we're on, and now what? Mm. And part of that is just showing up. And I think probably some of the best things that I've ever done in all of this is that, you know, you have to be honest, and you can't sugarcoat any of these things, but these are hard conversations. I've actually took one of my, when one of my leaders passed away of cancer, I was the one that told her daughter. So I walked into high school. She was in grade 11 at the time, went to the principal, and I was just at the hospital when this mom passed away. And the husband actually asked me, he says, Ron, why don't you go tell her? Mm-hmm. I can't. And I said, sure, I'll go. And so I remember walking in, told the principal, I says, hey, where's this young gal? And she said, well, he's in gym now, blah, blah, blah. And so she just took one look at me, and she knew what happened. Mm-hmm. She just knew, because why am I there? Mm. And I remember there was no place to talk except in the physics or the lab. We were in the lab, and I'm talking to her, and I'm, you know, and I'm just broken, and she's broken, and even though this was an expected death, we knew that she was going to go, but still, it just, you know, mm-hmm. but there I am with a 16-year-old girl in my youth group who has just lost her mom, and she already lost her brother. This other story that I just referred to, her 12-year-old brother died of cancer. So this is like double whammy in this family. And I says, oh my goodness, I don't even want to do this anymore. And, but yet, you know what? We are seen as pillars, you know, in many ways. When we handle this stuff, we're seen as the men and women who will stand in the gap, you know, and speak love. We'll listen and we'll talk stories. And so when I've done this, man, I've talked, you know, and I don't avoid talking about this person. Like even when, you know, when Kim lost her mom, and I knew her family really well, and I said, okay, tell me the best stuff about your mom. I want to hear it right now, right now. And boom, there she was. She was lighting up, and you know, and even this is just, you know, within the next 24 hours, and I spent a lot of time there, and we were talking and talking and talking. I said, I need to hear more. Tell me more, you know, and it just helps ease the situation. But we have to be honest, and we have to be direct in the sense of, but the most important thing is we got to be there.
Yeah.
You do not want to be alone during these times. And high school kids deal with these things very, very differently because they're so, it's, you know, older adults, you know, there's no real manual on this thing, but adolescent is going to have a difficult time dealing with death.
And I don't know if the anticipation or maybe the predictability of the death as opposed to maybe the suddenness of something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for instance, someone's wrestling with a disease for an extended period of time. I don't know if that preparation necessarily makes it easier as opposed to a sudden death or a sudden tragedy. What about, Ron, you mentioned that high school students and teenagers take these kind of things, they grieve differently. What about the maybe the connectedness between other things in their lives? Like, would it be accurate to say, you know, their minds are kind of just like a series of networks that everything's connected? So you might have maybe some trouble at home, maybe some bullying, maybe some parent issues, maybe some issues going on at school or maybe a sports team, whatever. And do you see that these trigger points are connected to say that, hey, maybe this particular tragedy brings back something from 3-4 years ago, or maybe it reminds me of, you know, the fact that my family is broken, or the fact that my dad lost his job, or what would you say about that connectedness?
Well, I think that anytime there is a death, I mean, obviously that's the major catastrophic event that has happened, but yet those are all connected in terms of what else has gone on in that student's life. So if there are issues, if there are broken relationships, if there are things that have gone wrong, it just mounds up even more so to speak. And because all of it does become connected then, because you do rehearse and redo things and, well, what about this? What about that? You know, and so I think the connection definitely happens because you realize that you're broken now, majorly. And a lot of times these other things just kind of make their way into their world. And again, I would just say that girls and boys deal with this differently. Girls talk more than boys. Boys are much more silent. And you'll know that when you're talking with grieving students, girls will talk more so than boys. Boys have a, you know, whether it's a silence thing or whatever it is, but it's just, I've always found that it's harder to figure out how boys are doing, you know, and I think the emotional part of all of this is part of that, you know, so, but I don't know if that actually answered your question there, Gitch.
Yeah, no, it does. I think it's helpful. What other advice might you offer if there's resources or as far as, you know, you mentioned we're kind of pillars. What about as parents or maybe, you know, an aunt or an uncle or whatever the case may be, when a tragedy strikes, you know, whether it's a death or maybe an illness or something otherwise, when something tragic occurs, what's the role? What encouragement or instructions can we offer for parents or authority figures, teachers, other youth workers, whatever the case might be?
I think one good thing is what you guys did is offered your place up. Mm. And so to let your kid know if they had a friend that died or anything like that they have a place to bring their friends to. Because one of the biggest things is what you were talking to us earlier about today, Gitch, is that kids want to be with kids. They don't necessarily want us around. But when they do ask us to be around, we have to jump on that opportunity. Because it's not every time they're going to ask us to be around. Most of the time, they just want to hang out with your friends. So one of the best things parents can do is just let their kid know that, hey, come invite your friends over. Come, we'll order some food. Don't worry about anything like that. And just have a space for that, which I think is one of the biggest things. And then also what you said is the sharing memories.
Yeah.
Like, what a great way to honor someone by saying what you loved about them most and the funniest stories you can remember about that person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for, I remember when one of my best friends died when I was just graduated high school, that necessarily wasn't the first thing on my mind. And it was one of our coaches that actually got us together. And he's like, hey, let's just talk. And let's like, what are some of your favorite moments from his life? And that was one of the most helpful things, just to like remember those stories and to hear how he reacted to certain things and just to be around those guys. And for me, being a dude, it really helped just hanging out with other guys and having people available if it ever needed to be talked about.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing too, and I mean, just moving into the conversations, because how do you talk to somebody about this? You know they're hurting and you know they're grieving and anxiety levels are high, you know, all those kinds of things. And we have to acknowledge that and say, you know, say things like, hey, I know you are hurting and it is okay to hurt.
Yeah.
I think when I, when I've chatted and talked with students in their homes and at different places and all those kinds of things, I think one of the things you want to stay away from is using words like, I know how you feel. you know.
Yeah.
You don't, because this is, could have been your best
totally,
friend.
And it's a totally different situation.
It is, and it's totally different. So you have to be very, very careful. You may have experienced loss, mm-hmm. and that's all good, but you can't use, I know how you feel.
Not right in that moment.
You know, that moment doesn't work well.
Yeah. There was an article that came out and it said, here are like five unhelpful things on to say to a teenager or to someone when dealing with a tragedy. One of them was like telling stories about how you handled the situation. Two, saying, I don't know, I want to know what you think of this, Ron. One of them was like saying God is sovereign and he's in control of all mm-hmm. things. And it said that was not a helpful thing to mm-hmm. say. And so where do you bring the Bible mm-hmm. into this and God's word? And because I know there's comfort in the scripture.
Yep.
But at times of tragedy, sometimes we pull out the wrong ones.
Well, yeah, and I would agree that, you know, just to, you know, to say, hey, guess what? God's, you know, totally in control. He's sovereign. He knows what's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things I'm thinking about at that very moment.
Chin up.
You know, all that kind of stuff. What I want these students to know, and here's what I say, you know what? I really, really do love you guys. And I'm here for you. I don't have, and this is something I always say, I don't have all the answers. I don't. I know that I have a relationship with God that understands all this stuff, but I have no words for you that can make this better right now. None. Other than if you're hearing me say, I love you, I want to walk with you, you can call me anytime, anywhere, any place. I want to grieve with you.
Yeah.
You know, there is something to that of saying, you know what? I don't know if these students really want answers as much as they want help.
Yeah.
You know.
And ears to listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think another helpful aspect of this too is to recognize that, hey, you know what? There's no right way or there's no wrong way to grieve, in the sense that, you know, I remember in high school, there was one of our, I was in grade 12 and a student was tragically killed in just a horrible, horrible car accident. Awful. And it was actually fortunate that it was only one fatality. But nevertheless, our school was shook up by this tragedy of the death. His name was Zach, and he was, you know, he's in my grade, and your grade 12 year, it's a big deal, right? And I remember not knowing how to feel, because, you know, here was a guy who's in my school. We had a lot of classes together, but we weren't necessarily close friends. And so I saw everyone ranging from deep mourning and wailing and weeping in the hallways, to some people were staying home and some people were just quiet, and the school was just heavy and dark for those few days. And I remember thinking, how am I supposed to feel? And I think one of the important things to recognize is even the psalmists or read Lamentations, they're exactly that, they're laments. And we have the right, we have the ability, it's within our, you know, it's within our ability, can I say, to approach God and say, oh God, hear my cry. Psalm 55, Psalm 61, listen to my cry, you know, hear me. I need you. I need you to hear me and answer me. And we can stand before God's throne and weep and cry, and that's okay. And I think that's probably one of the most helpful things, is to recognize that, look, there's no right way to feel. There's no wrong way to feel. There's no one way to process, especially too. I mean, we're coming at this from the other side of adolescence, looking towards adolescence and saying, hey, this demographic, they actually process differently, and they need each other, and they may not grieve the way we think they should, or they may not grieve the way we would, and I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's very important, I would suggest, not to dismiss it, but also to not bring it up. Luke, you made a great point, as parents, to be able to say, look, I'm here, and I want to create this space. I'm going to buy you pizza, whatever it is.
Yep.
Come hang out, spend the week at our place.
And I think you want to just be, as adults, parents, you know, if your son or daughter is going through a time like this and they lost a friend, or, you know, all those things, or there's somebody even closer than that or whatever, you know, there are warning signs that as adults and as parents, we need to be aware of, like things like depression. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are certain stages of grieving that happens, you know. I mean, obviously there's shock. And then there's this whole idea of denial or anger or, you know, all those kinds of things, depression and all those kind of things. And so there could be a definite tracking that goes on here that you have to be aware of. So if this anxiety or if this depression lingers, they're not moving forward, okay? And so that's where, you know, we need help, and that's where an adolescent can't quite deal with it, and that's where mm-hmm. you need to become a bit more, you know, integrated with this situation. And so I think you just have to be aware of those things, because every student is going to processed differently, as you said. And grieving doesn't have a formula. There are certain things that need to happen. So,
yeah, that's really helpful. Let me close with this, and also just it's worth noting the tremendous hope that we have in Christ. And it's not to sound trite, but the reality is, look, if we profess faith in Jesus Christ, if we accept the work that He's done, and we proclaim faith and life in Jesus' name by His death and resurrection on the cross, which was enough to cover a multitude of sins. I think if we profess that, and if that's true for us, and if that's true for any loved one who's passed, look, we have hope. And so death does sting, and death does, it's horrible, and we can grieve, and it's important too, and it's healthy too. Let me close with these final words from the psalmist in Psalm 62, really helpful, verse 5. Let all that I am wait quietly before God, for my hope is in Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress where I will not be shaken. My victory and honor come from God alone. He is my refuge, a rock where no enemy can reach me. Mm. And I find hope in those words, the fact that God is in fact our refuge and He's our strength. And, you know, while those words may not be the most appropriate at all times and all places, it's 100% true that there's hope in God. So thanks, guys, for your thoughts, for your words. And if you have things you want to talk about, or you want us to talk about, or you've got a joke or a interesting article you'd like to throw our way, we'd love to interact with it. We'd love to hear from you. Yeah, jokes. I mean,
you like jokes.
I'm a funny guy, right?
Look up, it's a bird.
Hey, oh dear. It's just that flapping. Anyway, we digress. But between two worlds, that's all one word. You want me to spell it for you?
Yes.
Anyway, between two worlds at northview.org. If Rosetta Stone, maybe, if you're around, you could help me out. Between two worlds at northview.org. We'd love to hear from you. God bless. Let them know the light that you left me will ever glow.